Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from any unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's our normal format. Basically, we go, if you've been here before, you know, but if you haven't, we go through the steps out of the big book with a panel of two speakers each week. We take 13 weeks to go through all 12 steps. Some of the steps we spend 2 weeks on. There's one night where you get like three steps for one. It's a threefer. But at the end of the 13 weeks, we have a supper and a speaker event where we invite a special speaker, and that's where we all are tonight. So if you want to come back next week, we'll be starting on step one, and we'll have two fresh speakers there. So tonight, we have Charlie C., who has come all the way from Arlington, Virginia, to come tell his story. And I'm going to ask Sharon to introduce him. There you are. And that's Charlie's water, and I'm going to sit down.
Okay. Hi, I'm an alcoholic named Sharon. It's fabulous to see all of your faces, such a full room tonight. I'm excited that we're all here to hear Charlie. Charlie and I met back in 2001 when I first got sober. He was a member of my very first home group, and he was extremely inspirational there. He taught me a lot in the beginning about recovery, fellowship, and service. And in 2004, Charlie moved up to Arlington. But over the years, I've had the privilege of reconnecting with him at service assemblies and different events, workshops, and different potlucks like tonight. So I've heard bits and pieces of Charlie's story throughout the year, and I've shared a lot with him, but I'm so excited to hear an hour of his experience, strength, and hope. So almost an hour, don't panic, Charlie. So I'm so excited to introduce you all to Charlie.
Hello, everybody. I'm Charlie Alcoholic. Thank you all so much for inviting me here this evening. My sobriety date is July 5, 1986, and my home group is the 12 and 12 at 7:30. We meet at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Russell Road in Alexandria, Virginia on Tuesday nights. So if you're ever up our way, please stop by and join us in a 12-step study. But I have a wonderful history with the Tidewater area. I sobered up down here in the rooms in Norfolk and Virginia Beach. And my home group when I was living here was Indian River 12-step study, at another Emmanuel Episcopal Church out on Princess Anne Road in Virginia Beach. So, you know, I got a good foundation here in the Tidewater area before I left. And I tell you, leaving that home group was the hardest thing I had to do. I mean, I had great friends down here in the fellowship, and I heard early on to try to make a 12-step study and or a big book study part of your regular weekly meeting cycle, because that's where you will read and learn and talk about the program of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I did. You know, my home group was a 12-step study. And then on Tuesday nights, I would go to St. Tim's. I don't know if that meeting is still going on. And on Thursday night, I would go to Freedom Big Book. And I did that for a lot of years to read about our program of recovery. So over the years, those words in the 12 and 12 in the Big Book made a home in my head and in my heart. And they come out in different ways, but they come out. And I'm so grateful for that advice early on. You know, I grew up in a home in Arlington where there was a lot of drinking and a lot of carrying on. And I watched my mother and father fight and drink. And I would see my dad, and I always said, I will never be like that. And I was this geeky little kid who didn't do very well in sports and academics. I was shy and introverted. And I remember when I was in the eighth grade, I had a particularly really rough week. And I was over at a friend's house on a Saturday, and I got into his dad's liquor. And I drank myself into a blackout. Now, this is what people told me, because I don't remember this. But I was out on the street, and I'm like, what, 13, 14? That's, I guess, how old you are when you're in the eighth grade. And the police picked me up. They took me home. This will date me just a little bit, but the doctor came to the house to check me out. But when I came around, I was so upset and so embarrassed at what I had done that I just didn't think I could ever face anybody again. And so the following Monday, when I'm walking down to the bus stop to go to school, all of a sudden all these kids ran up to me and started talking to me. And then when I got to school, more kids were running up and talking to me. And the cheerleader was talking to me, and the football player was talking to me. So what my friends had done is they had spread this rumor about what had happened to me on Saturday. And you know, all of a sudden I was walking a little bit taller down those halls. And alcohol had done for me what I couldn't do for myself. And that incident launched 20 years of drinking. Now, I don't need to stand here tonight and talk about 20 years of drinking. We all know how to drink. We all know how we get in trouble. We all know all the crazy things that we do. But I'll give you just a couple of highlights that, you know, come through. Number one, I developed a very, very bad, socially unacceptable behavior when I would start drinking. I don't know if you know what the word mooning is. But that's, you know, where you... And so I would start drinking, and then I'd moon people. And people waited for that event to happen. And, you know, I fed right into that. But I was, got known as the class drunk. And there's a picture in my high school yearbook that has my name, and it says, "The Morning After." And I'm bundled up, and I'm sleeping it off. And I thought it was great. You know, I was signing that picture like I was a movie star. Well, my parents weren't too pleased with that, especially because they had to pay for the yearbook. And, but, you know, that's where I was. I'll also tell you that I was in three very serious car accidents where I could have been killed or been killed. One was when I was in the 11th grade, where we were in a car, we were drinking. A friend of mine, We called him Booger Mike because he used to pick his nose. But he was driving. He lost control of the vehicle, flipped the vehicle over into some bushes. Everybody ran away. I got knocked unconscious. They all left me. They left me for dead. They didn't know what was going on. And I came around and some other people picked me up and took me home. But that didn't faze me. You know, there was other car accidents where I could have been killed. When I was in the Navy station here, I rolled a car over in the ditch. Didn't even think that was enough to make me stop drinking. So there are just a lot of episodes like that. And I continued to drink. You know, I got a DUI, and this was like in 71. And back then the Vietnam War was still going on and I had a low draft number. So if you joined the military, probation and all that went away. So looked like a step up. And my dad was sure glad for me to do that. So that's what I did. And it turned out that Navy was a pretty good thing for me. But it was also like putting a coyote in charge of the chicken coop because I had a place to sleep, although the ship wasn't that great, food to eat, although the food wasn't that great, and a paycheck, which usually got drank up almost every payday. So you get the gist of this. I met a wonderful woman. We got married. We went out to Hawaii for 3 years for my shore duty out there. And I did have a presence of mind, even though I was drinking quite a bit, to use the Navy's tuition aid program while I was out there, and I put myself through the University of Hawaii. To this day, I don't know how I did it, working and doing that, and drinking on top of all of it, but I got it done. And so it did happen. I fathered a child, my son, Matt. Several of y'all in the room remember him as a little boy running around Bayview Group and stuff like that. So let's just bring it to the 4th of July, 1986. It was not a good day. I drank myself into a blackout again. The wife says that I shoved her. I took my son in a blackout down to Waterside to watch the fireworks. I don't know how we got down there. I don't know how we got back. But somebody was helping me drive that car that night. But when I got home and I passed out, the next morning when I realized what I had done, that everything I never wanted to be, I had become, I knew I had to have had my last drink. And the wife had that look that if looks could kill, I'd be dead. So I did what a lot of us do. I made a call for help. And I called, it was not AA, but it was some kind of alcohol something. Back there, back in the day, it was Serenity Lodge, was the big woo-woo place that everybody went. But this was on a Monday, and so the guy says, well, can you come in on a Wednesday for screening? I said, I need some help right now. That angel, I call him an angel. That angel said to me, well, then go to an AA meeting. And he directed me to the Indian River 12-step study at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Princess Anne Road. Now, we have all been to our first meeting. We all know how that feels. But when I walked up to that meeting that night, it was the absolute longest walk of my life. I'm walking up there thinking my whole life is over. I'm never going to have fun anymore. I'm never going to have friends anymore. It's all come down to this. I got to go to AA. When I walked into that room, there were two men sitting there. One man named John, another man named Richard. The man John carried the message to me. He 12-stepped me. He told me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what a 12-step study was. He gave me a meeting list. I stayed for the meeting, and at the end of the meeting, that man Richard gave me my white chip. And so far, it's the only white chip I've ever had to pick up, and I hope it stays that way. And that's where I heard about going to meetings and studying the literature in AA. 2 weeks after I started going to that meeting, I asked that man, John, to be my sponsor, and I made Indian River 12-Step Study my home group. That man, John, is still my sponsor to this day. I know it's a little unusual to have a sponsor that long, but we have never broken that sponsor-sponsee relationship, and I was just talking to him last week. And he's moved, and I've moved, but he got me through the steps, and he got me through all of the hard work that had to be done. And you know, John never gave me assignments. He never said, do this, and do that, and do this, and do that. He showed me by his example. I remember one time I said to him, when should I do my fourth step? He said, you will know. And I realized when I finally sat down to do my fourth step that I was being moved by a power greater than myself to do that work instead of an assignment. Now, it might work for other people, but that's how it worked, and that's the method I use, and it's worked for me. But I do like to talk about the steps, what I've read in the 12 and 12 in the big book. So the first step, you know, admitting that we were powerless over alcohol. You know, the first sentence in the first step says, who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one. And at the end of that, it says, under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA and there become willing to listen as only the dying can be. I was willing to listen. I was dying inside. And in the middle of the first step in the 12 and 12, there's some words that say, less desperate cases failed to get sober because they could not identify with the feelings of hopelessness. I could identify. That night I walked to my first meeting, I felt hopeless. My whole life was over. Now, I had been going back to church at least 2 years before I sobered up. And I'd be in that church just praying. And I mean, I'd be in there just praying. And then I'd come home and start drinking again. So when they were talking about God in the rooms, you know, I just wanted to run out the door. And I would sit there and I would say, you know, God has let me down. I had been going to church and I had been praying to stop drinking, and now I'm stuck here in AA. Well, that man Richard in my home group had heard enough. And he cross-talked me one night in the meeting. And you know, we don't cross-talk, but that was a good cross-talk. He said to me, don't you see your prayer has been answered? You are somewhere where you can stop drinking. And I'm going to tell you, that was a huge impact on me because it made me realize right there that maybe my prayer had been answered, that there was a chair in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, and that I was somewhere finally where I could do something about my drinking. I had tried to stop drinking on my own many times, but I just absolutely could not do it. So a lot of significant things happen in the first 30, 60, and 90 days, which I think happens to a lot of us. You know, I made that group my home group. I got a sponsor. But then I met these two guys who were going to this meeting on Saturday night. They're sitting back there. There's Bob right there. Wave, Bob. And Bill right there. Those men were in Bayview Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and although it wasn't my home group, those two men had a significant impact on my sobriety in the program of recovery in AA. The other significant thing that happened, that I was riding that pink cloud one night, and I came home, and the wife said to me, I don't care if you don't drink the rest of your life. I'm getting a divorce. AA was just another gimmick. She had had it. We had a 4-year-old son. She had to save herself and our son. You know, I wasn't too keen about that, but my sponsor said, just let go and let God. And And I said, I'm trying, but, you know, but long story short, she ended up divorcing me. And, but because I was staying sober, you know, we had joint custody of our son. And I started bringing my son with me to the Bayview group on Saturday night, where they have child care, so he could be there. And there were a lot of us, Tina remembers, there was a lot of us in that group where we had small children. That was just one. Sorry about that. We all had small children, and they all rose up and grew up together. And we had cookouts and family gatherings and stuff like that. Hey, I'm okay with this water if you guys are. I'm not going to fall down. Sorry, I didn't mean to dump that over. But another significant thing happened is I got sent to New Orleans for a Navy school. And I'm just like 2 years sober. And I don't think New Orleans is a good place to go anywhere, but especially when you're in young sobriety. But you know, I went to a meeting every night. And you know, I was doing good in class. You know, I was sitting there, but I would watch these people and they'd be sitting there all fish-faced and bony-eyed and falling asleep. And all of a sudden they'd get up and run out the room, and I know they were hugging the porcelain throne, and they'd come back all sweaty and stuff. But anyway, I was at a meeting on the West Bank of Algiers in New Orleans one night, and a guy says, after the meeting, if anybody wants to do their third step, stick around after the meeting. So I stuck around, and we went in this room, and we broke out the big book, and we read the third step in the big book, and we all got down on our knees, and we said the third step prayer. Now, little did I know what I did that night. In that little room, in that dark church on the West Bank of Algiers. But I had made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. So just like in the second step and the third step, there's little words there. Like at the end of the second step, it says, every AA meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves to Him. In the third step, there's a sentence in the middle right there in the first or second paragraph that says, the effectiveness of the whole AA program, the whole program, rests on how well we make that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. I found that that third step in the big book is a tremendous tool for me. I say it every morning in my morning prayers. But if somebody's plucking my nerves or there's a situation, you know, I can use that third step prayer and say, relieve me of the bondage of whoever it is or whatever it is. But it's a very good tool for me. So in that second year, Bob and Bill and this woman named Trudy invited me to the Shenandoah Roundup outside Harrisonburg. It was a beautiful place. Beautiful place, surrounded by farms and sheep, and but we'd go hiking and camping, or hiking around there, and Bob would always lead us out on a hike. But the theme of the roundup that year was Came to Believe. And after the first speaker meeting on that Friday night, we all went downstairs, sat around a big room, and the chairperson opened up and said, we want everybody to share when and how they came to believe in a power greater than themselves. And as soon as they asked the question, I thought of that incident with Richard, where he told me my prayer had been answered. I was somewhere where I could stop drinking. That is my second step experience. Our literature tells us we don't have to have some kind of woo-woo experience like that. But I had something that happened significant that I know now is my second step experience. So I want to tell everybody that I did my fourth step and my fifth step, sixth step, seventh step. I did all of my steps, but I could talk a half an hour on every one of them, and we just don't have that time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to tell you a few things. You know, like I said, I started doing my four step when I was moved by that power greater than myself. Basically, I was hurting too much. But you know how our literature tells us in our four-step, that some things must never be known, that they're going to go to the grave with us. No one must ever know. And I was in the Navy, and I was serving under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and nobody was going to know that I was gay. It was going to go to my grave. Nobody was ever going to know. Let me tell you something. It ain't a working, because I was miserable. And you know that sentence in the 12 and 12 talks about a perverse soul sickness? That's how I felt. And until I broke out that 12 and 12 and I answered all of those questions on sex and the sex relationship in the 12 and 12, went over them with my sponsor, you know, finally I felt like I could move on to a full and meaningful sobriety. It tells us in our literature also on the fourth and fifth step that skimping on this step is a perilous resolve. And I agree with that. You know, I didn't drink, but I was shaky. I mean, I was standing at the turning point once again. And either I was going to get honest with myself and grow in the program, or I was going to go out the door. I identified defects of character and shortcomings. The top two defects of character were fear and envy. I didn't realize how fear-based my life was. And my number one shortcoming that came up kind of in a funny way was that I cursed really bad all the time, you know, Navy, thank you. But I got a note home from my son's teacher when he was in the second grade, why is Matthew cursing so much in school? So I realized that that was a shortcoming because he was hearing it at home. So I had to stop. So it's like there was a guy in my home group, Sharon will remember, his name was Jim B. He said one night in the meeting, he said, the best way to work steps 6 and 7 is to live our lives as though our defects of character and our shortcomings have been removed. What a concept. You know, if I want to live my life without fear, I can't be fearful. If I want to be not envious, I can't envy things. Those things I used to drink behind, too. If I was afraid, give me something to drink. If I was envious, give me something to drink. If I want to stop cursing, I got to stop cursing. I can't say the 7-step prayer to have me stop cursing and then curse all day and say, well, you didn't answer my prayer. I got to stop cursing. So my 8-step list came out of my 4th and 5th step. And that's the beauty of having a sponsor to help you weed out the ones. And then I went about making my 9th step amends. And a little illustration I'd like to use is, like, say all the people that are on my 9th step list were standing right in front of me. On the other side of those people was a full and meaningful sobriety. And until I got past those people and made my amends, I would not be able to go on to a full and meaningful sobriety. So I started making my amends. And I don't need to tell all of you, but I'm going to tell you two. My sponsor had me do my amends at my dad's grave. My sponsor told me to go up on that grave and to say everything that had been left unsaid, to make my amends for my part, and before I left, to tell my dad that I loved him. So I went up on that grave, and I was just a boo-hoo-hooing. And I said all those things that got left unsaid. And then I made my amends for my part, just a boo-hoo-hooing. And before I left, I kissed my hand, I touched his tombstone. I said, Dad, I love you. And I walked away. I left a lot of things up on that grave that day. Left it right there. But who but a sponsor knows to tell you to do something like that? I wanted to go up there and dump and walk away. But it was one of the most healing things I did in AA. Same thing with my mother. You know, I was able to make my amends with her before the Alzheimer's started taking her. And she said to me after I got done, you know, she said, you know, your dad and I did the best we knew how to do. And, you know, we hear that a lot in the rooms. But when she said it, I knew she realized that all was not really good in that home, that there was a lot of craziness that we had to grow up with. But sobriety allowed me to look at her with different eyes, with compassion and love. And the other gift was that my mother knew that her son was going to be okay. That's a nice gift to give to your parents, that she finally didn't have to worry about her son, that her son was going to be okay. So because I was staying sober and because life was good, I got joint custody of my son, and we started spending a lot of time together, and I was able to raise him as a single father. I call myself now like living in steps 10, 11, and 12. You know, we do a lot of work. We do all that work. I mean, that's a lot of work when you think about it. And my sponsor never told me to throw away my four step or burn it. Now, if your sponsor tells you that, that's good. Whatever, do what your sponsor say. But my sponsor never put that on me. You know how you hear sometimes say, burn your four step, you did it now. But I kept mine, he never told me, but I kept it, but I used that as a tool to show other people in the fellowship that this, even though it's hard work, it can be easy, it's simple. And, you know, people want to read it, it's fine, but I just show them that this is what I did. You know, I show my list, I show my columns, you know, things like that. And so I keep that as, also it was a lot of work, so I wanted to keep it. But you know what's nice about the 10th step is it tells us, you know, right off the bat, you know, to continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. It gives us several options in that process. There's a spot check inventory taken anytime during the day when something comes up or somebody plucks your nerves or something like that. Or there's at the end of the day when you can draw up the balance sheet, weighing the credits and the debits. Well, I'm a spot check kind of guy. I can't wait till the end of the day. And there was a time in my job, I worked on the naval base, where I was praying for 14 people every day, and not for just 2 weeks. I prayed for them for a whole year, maybe longer. Now, I was the common denominator, but these people were causing me resentments, and so the only thing I knew was to do was to pray for them. And a guy named Jim one time asked me, this is about a year and a half or so after this, he said, whatever happened to all that mess that was going on at your job? And I said, didn't even blink an eye. I just said, you know what? I threw the 12 steps on them and they never knew what hit them. That was the truth. They did not change. They did not change one single bit. But who changed? Charlie changed. I started looking at him with different eyes. I got a buddy up in Northern Virginia. He always says, bless them, change me. And that's really the way it was, because they did not change, but I changed. There's a spiritual axiom in that 10th step that when we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us. And that's been my experience. You know, if I'm upset about something, there's something wrong with me. Joe Bag of Donuts could have plucked my last nerve, but if it's still rent space in my head at night, there's something wrong with me. Susie, somebody may have said something at work or wherever and got me upset, but if I'm still banging around between my ears in the evening, there's something wrong with me. So, you know, I had to learn early on that I needed to take care of that stuff. Either an amend or an apology or changing my behavior or just not getting into situations that caused me to do things that plucked people's nerves. Another wonderful sentence in that 10th step is that our inventory taking does not necessarily need to be done in red ink. It's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. And I submit to you, and it's been my experience, that we do a lot of good things every day that far outweighs something that might have been bad, and that we have tools to correct it. We do not need to have a whole bad day over something. We can't afford to do it, at least I can't. But prayer, making a phone call, doing something to turn off that racket. So to me, that 10th step is a really good tool to use. The 11th step, seeking through prayer and meditation. So I told you, you know, I had that second step experience, so I had continued to be praying. And I was with my sponsor, and he had some land outside of Lynchburg. And we'd go up there on the weekend, we'd talk a little AA, and we would work some steps. And he had a small little trailer about the size of one of these tables. Maybe not that small, but it was small. And my sponsor, John, is a giant of a man. He's a big guy. And we got up that morning, and I saw John get down on his knees and say his prayers. He was seeking through prayer and meditation to improve his conscious contact with God as he understood him. And like I say, John never told me to do anything. He showed me. Don't tell me, show me. And I used to be the guy that, and if you're doing this and it's working, that's fine. I'm just saying, this is me. But I used to say my prayers in the shower while I was, you know, making breakfast or getting dressed or driving to work, or kind of give God a high five as I go out the door, you know, and hoping everything's going to be okay. But if I just got up 5 or 10 minutes earlier and took that time to seek through prayer and meditation, I go out of my house in a lot better condition. I continue to do that to this day. I've been on them knees every morning for a long time. Somebody is listening, because it does me a whole lot of good. My meditation practice over the years has taken several forms. Sometimes it's reading our literature, but our meditation books, but that hasn't been working so much for me. But if I just sit and be quiet and look out at the out of my balcony, or, you know, just be quiet and think for a little while. I usually get that opportunity in the morning for at least 10, 15, 20 minutes every morning just to be quiet before I go out and do my day. So I know that prayer and meditation is a big part of my program, and it helps me considerably. But now my favorite, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice the principles in all of our affairs. And I'm going to tell you what, there's a great chapter in the big book, Working with Others. But it's been my privilege to be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous, to have had two real good solid home groups over my sobriety, to be of service in those home groups, not only at the home group level, but the district and at the area. But my favorite service position is coffee maker. Because, you know, people got to talk to you. You know, if you're there early and you're making the coffee and you're setting it up, because you remember, John and Richard got to the meeting early. They made the coffee. They set up the tables and chairs. They put the 12 and 12s on the table. They put the ashtrays on the table. They set up the literature rack. They were ready when Charlie walked through the door to his first meeting. I love being a coffee maker, because you see these people come through the door. You know, and they don't wake up just one morning and say, gee, I think I'll go to AA. Something bad has happened. You know, our first step says, why this insistence that everybody must hit bottom? Something bad happens to us when we come in that door and take that longest walk. But the 12th step in the fellowship of AA and the tools that I've learned in this fellowship has allowed me to step outside the rooms as well. And it's allowed me to do things beyond my wildest imagination. I started going to work on Mondays and Fridays. I started working 8 hours for 8 hours pay. I accumulated a lot of sick leave. Because before, you know, I used to have that brown bag flu on Mondays and Fridays. Oh, I'm not feeling, I think I got flu-like symptoms. Yeah. But you see where I'm going with that. But also, I got to retire from the Navy, and I had a federal career, and I got to retire from that as well. But I'd like to tell you the story behind the story. And that's, I get choked up behind this. That's the ability that I had as a sober man to raise my son. The boy was 4 years old when I sobered up. He never saw his dad drunk. I hope he never does. But the home that he grew up in, he knew he was safe. He had food to eat. He had clothes to wear. There were not crazy carrying on, screaming and hollering and fighting. But I will say this. If you can make it through the teenage years, and you can make it through the teenage years sober, you can make it through anything. But, and we made it. But, you know, there's just so many stories behind this. But I'll tell you one that I just love to tell. And it was, he was a natural athlete. I mean, he could look at a sport and know how to play it. And, but anyway, he was on this baseball team 1 year. And the coach started asking, say, we need a team mom. Now, who's going to be the team mom? You know where this is going, right? So finally, I said to the coach, I said, what you need? And it was a lot of stuff. He told me all these things that I needed to do about making sure the kids get to practice. And you know, there's an official scorebook for baseball. I mean, but anyway, I had to keep that. It was an official record. But all the stuff you got to do, plan for the games, call everybody, practice changes, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sure y'all have done stuff like that. It's not something that you can do with a hangover. But at the end of the season, that team had won the city championship. And my son had hit the leadoff run to spark the team to victory. But that's another story. But at the end of the season, the coach, we were having our little picnic and everything, and the coach was passing out the trophies, and all of a sudden I realized the coach was talking about me. I get choked up on this one too. They had got this little plaque for me. Now they didn't call me the team mom, they called me the activities coordinator. But they had that little plaque up there, and I still got it sitting on my bookcase in my home in Arlington. But I went up and I got that little plaque. And all them little niblets, they just a clapping. And the parents were clapping. And some of my friends from the fellowship were there to bear witness to this gift of sobriety. And I got that little plaque and I just did a little thanks God. Because if it wasn't for AA, I would have never been able to do that. I would have never been able to say, yeah, I'll show up there 4 or 5 nights a week. I'll do all these things that I need to do. It was a gift of sobriety. It was a joy of living. And the first sentence in the 12 and 12 says, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step, and action is its key word. I've had a lot of joy behind things in AA. One of the biggest joys to see my son graduate from high school. You know, he had a lot of his dad in him. And so, you know, there was a little, but he graduated. But he came home after he graduated. He came home one day and said he's going to join the Navy. And we had never really talked about him joining the military or anything. But he had a friend and he would join it. So he joined the Navy. And he asked me to go with him to Richmond to the induction center. So I went with him. And I was the only parent there. But my son had asked his sober dad to go with him to the induction center to join the Navy. And I sat there. And he came out and he sat next to me, about, I don't know, three quarters of the way through, and I said, "How's it going?" He goes, "Okay." I said, "Let me tell you something. They want you more than you want them. So if you're not hearing what you want to hear, we'll get up and leave right now." And he said, "Thanks, I needed to hear that." But he stayed. And he went off to boot camp. And I was preparing to go to see him graduate boot camp at Great Lakes. And 9/11 hit that week. And it closed everything down, so I couldn't go. But he eventually came home, I got to see him. But he was stationed aboard the aircraft carrier Roosevelt that was right here in Norfolk. And his sober dad went down to see him off to war. And his sober dad was there when the big aircraft carrier came around that corner. And then the plane that proud to be an American. And the ship came alongside and they threw over the first line and the Navy band struck up Anchors Away. And for a 20-year Navy veteran senior chief, I was loving it. And I was like, yeah. But that's the joy of living. That's a gift of sobriety. And Matt did his 4 years, and he got honorable discharge. He went to college, and his sober dad was there to see him graduate from college. That's the joy of living. That's a gift of sobriety. After he graduated, he got a good job up in Washington, D.C., so he was close to me. And so we were able to spend time together, and he met a wonderful woman. And after a while, they got engaged, and they made plans to get married. And my son asked his sober dad to be the best man. That's the joy of living. That's a gift of sobriety. Thank you to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the proudest day of my life, to stand up there with him, his sober dad standing there next to him. I've been places, seen things, met people, but nothing was ever more proud than to be there standing up with my son. We're blessed now with two beautiful little granddaughters. And when the first girl was about two, my daughter-in-law asked me, would I watch Marie overnight so they could go celebrate their anniversary? And I said, of course I will. Now this crowd gets it. They understand it right away. But there was a time in my life where you could not trust me to take out the trash. And she was trusting me with that little girl. That's a gift of sobriety. That's the joy of living. And when I come over there, and them two little girls come running to me, "Grandpa, Grandpa, Grandpa," ain't nothing better. Ain't nothing better. That's the joy of living. It is a gift of my sobriety. So, you know, I have a lot of good stories. Remember that woman that told me, "I don't care if you don't ever drink again, I'm getting a divorce." Well, she got divorced and she got remarried and they moved down to North Carolina. Well, almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half or so ago, her husband died. And so my son was trying to get her relocated up to Northern Virginia. And he was having a heck of a time with it. And through a series of conversations and stuff, he asked me, would I help him get his mother relocated up to Northern Virginia? And I said, of course I'll help you. Because I had told him, I said, you know, there was a time your mother and I were in love. And from that love came you. So if there's anything I can do to help you help her, I'm glad to do it. Now, I wasn't thinking that, but I got the truck, went down to North Carolina. I just love this story. This is what's so cool about AA. So she got in the truck and we're starting to head up. And, you know, I hadn't talked to the woman for like over 30 some years about anything substantial. But I had to, before I relocated, I had to ask her how much money you got, how much checks you got coming in, you know, so I could find a place for her to live. So she gets in the truck, we're starting to drive back up to Arlington. She says to me, "I want you to be my power of attorney, my medical power of attorney, the executor of my estate, and help me get my will together because I need somebody I can trust." I ain't. So I was willing to do that. But let me tell you something. There was part of me that just wanted to go, hiya, like me now. But I did it. You know, I guess I'm just going to wrap it up here. You know, there's a lot of good stories. It's so wonderful to see friends in the room tonight. I always go back to that chapter in the big book, Working with Others, and I'll paraphrase a little bit. But it says, life takes on new meaning to recover and to see others recover around you, to see a fellowship grow up around you. This is an opportunity you must not miss. To have a host of friends, frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. I love going to meetings. I love seeing people. I go 4 or 5 meetings a week. It's a bright spot in my life. Coming down here is a bright spot in my life. In the 12 and 12, in the forward to the 12 and 12, there is a paragraph in the forward that says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles. Spiritual in nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happy and usefully whole. Expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happy and usefully whole. That's a great way to live. And so it's because of this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsor, higher power, the program of recovery, good people like you in rooms just like this all around the world, I'm standing here before you tonight as a free man, relieved of the bondage of myself. And I do feel happy and usefully whole. And it all started that day I took the absolute longest walk of my life to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the first time said, my name is Charlie, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Amazing. We're going to pass the Seven Tradition basket. Seven Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting.
Thank you.
Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all of groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to support. I hate that ends in a preposition. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Nice and quick, nice and loud. Good. Simple Actions is a home group. Oh, I got one up here. Howard gave me this. Annual Christmas party, all are welcome, hosted by Freedom Through Grace and 12 and 12 Study, Aldergate United Methodist Church, out on Bruce Road in Chesapeake. That's on Thursday, December 19th. 10 days from now, dinner at 6:30 and a speaker at 7:30. Okay. If you're in Simple Actions is a home group, if you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. Newcomers, you are the reason we are here tonight. Is there anyone in the room in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Andy, welcome.
I'm Alex, I'm an alcoholic.
Alex, welcome. Anybody else? I'm feeling like two more. All right. There's literature available over there. If you can fold it, it's free. If you'd like to buy books, please see any of the home group members. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available up here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And I know it's not normal in the Tidewater area to thank the speaker, but we'll thank Charlie now, and feel free to thank him after the meeting too. Thank you, Charlie. And after we clean up, where's, let's see, Malcolm, Seth, Morgan. These, all of us kind of know how the room's supposed to be put back together, but basically what we're gonna do is we're gonna leave six tables, like two rows of three, right in front of this podium. We'll leave six tables and seven chairs. The rest of the tables get put up. The rest of the chairs will get stacked and rolled away. And if you brought something, please take it out with you. We always end up at the end of these things like, ooh, what's this 55-gallon drum of pasta? And stuff like that there. Can I have a volunteer to come up, not slip, and read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Okay, Morgan. Don't slip.
Avoid it by going on this side. I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Shall we circle up and pray? Thank you, everybody. Thank you all for bringing stuff.
I will be the guy.
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.